This is Melissa. Today is the 5th of January, 2025. Happy New Year. With the Palestinians and the Israelis. This is Ambassador Benjamma. The UN Security Council must act against the appalling ethnic cleansing of Palestinians. He's the ambassador from Algeria. And he said, by targeting health facilities in Gaza, the usurping Zionist entity is seeking to carry out ethnic cleansing and force Palestinians to leave their land. Algeria's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ammar Benjamma, said Friday, calling on the Security Council to take action. During a meeting on the situation in the Middle East held at the request of Algeria, which holds the presidency of the Security Council in January, Ambassador Benjamma stated that the ongoing Zionist aggression against the Palestinian people, especially in Gaza, has a clear objective of driving Palestinians out of their land through a clear policy of ethnic cleansing, adding that one of the pillars of this policy is the systematic destruction of the health system. He goes on to cite some statistics. How many bombings have occurred? How many hospitals have been taken out? How many other medical facilities? He added that 53% of Gaza's hospitals are out of service. So I will post that one. And I was a little bit curious about this Jenin refugee camp. It's an older refugee camp. It's been around for a while, but there is fighting, and I guess you could say it's been taken over by, or so we're told, there it's a hotbed of militant activity. So this is from a paper called Z Network. It's interesting, and I think it's a good backgrounder of some information, but I also want to tell you that it's coming from something called Z Network, which is a left, or even what you might call a radical left publication that uses the Occupy, like the Occupy Wall Street strategy, in their dissent and in organizing themselves. So anyway, I like to get things from a wide variety of backgrounds, as Alan did too, to give us a fuller picture. And this just shows a little bit, it's questioning the Palestinian Authority itself. Said the latest news from the Palestinian Authority, so-called Protecting the Homeland operation in the Jenin refugee camp, paints a grim picture. 9 Palestinian lives have been claimed in this ongoing crackdown, which began December 5, including a young journalist, Shaza El-Sabah. The assault, as reported by the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, has expectedly received a stamp of approval from the Israeli occupation army, which seems content with the PA's performance. Meanwhile, Israel's Channel 14 confirmed that Israel has issued a clear deadline to the PA to finish the task, effectively eradicating what remains of resistance in Jenin in the name of ending lawlessness and apprehending outlaws. It is an irony that has become all too familiar. The Palestinian entity that was supposed to represent the will of the people and lead them toward freedom has become complicit in crushing resistance in one of the most marginalized and impoverished areas of the West Bank, all while serving the interests of Israel. This is the heart of the Palestinian paradox in the West Bank. For years, the PA has demanded unflinching obedience from the Palestinian people in the name of preparing Palestine for sovereignty and statehood. Yet, as the years have passed, this pledge has slipped further and further away. In its place, the PA has become complicit in the expansion of Israel's territorial control and the erosion of Palestinian rights. This might be a difficult conclusion to digest, but the killing of innocent Palestinians in Jenin at the hands of Palestinian security forces, while Israel and its settlers are cracking down on Palestinians elsewhere in the West Bank, should be all the proof needed to support the above claim. So I will post that one and you can take a look at that too. And then finally, just because of one of the things that Alan mentioned in this talk, which I am going to post, I wanted to take a look and see what kind of news we were hearing about climate change. And this is from Salon Magazine. Again, I think this is kind of left-leaning publication, December 30, 2024. Humanity is failing to meet its climate change goals. Here's what experts say we can still do. There is still time to act to limit the worst effects of climate change, but we need political willpower. Last month, the Copernicus Climate Change Service, an organization run by the European Union to monitor global heating, revealed that Earth was on track. Only on track to surpass the 1.5 degrees Celsius threshold. This manifested throughout 2024 in so-called weird weather. That's very scientific, isn't it? Weird weather. From unusually extreme hurricanes and floods to intense heat waves, parching droughts, and unprecedented wildfires, it's little wonder this year was the hottest in recorded history. Wow. Breaking the record shattered in 2023. So, you know, if you have done any looking into geoengineering, what is possible, what we think might have been going on for a while, then you can see the scaremongering technique of this article. Now, what really grabbed my attention here was their climate expert. The obstacle isn't technology, University of Pennsylvania climate scientist Dr. Michael E. Mann told Salon. We have the technological know-how and infrastructure to decarbonize our economy on the needed timescale. What we're currently lacking globally, and certainly now in the U.S. under the control of Trump and Republicans, is the political will. Now, those of you who've been following some of this for a while will know right off the bat that Michael E. Mann is the scientist who is responsible for the hockey stick graph, which was first published in 1998. So the consensus science is that the hockey stick graph has not been disproved. It is still true, and this is where we're headed. And they don't really care what anybody else has to say. This is the science that we must trust. But there have been many, many people who have stood up against it. One of them is Dr. Tim Ball out of Canada. And he was sued by Michael Mann for defamation, or let's just say defamation. I'll read the article soon enough and find out. But the court in BC ruled in Dr. Ball's favor. So this is from the Climate Change Dispatch. They say they are facts versus fear-mongering. This article is from 2019. Breaking news, Dr. Tim Ball defeats Michael Hockey Stick Mann's climate lawsuit. The Supreme Court of British Columbia has dismissed Dr. Michael Mann's defamation lawsuit against skeptical Canadian climatologist Dr. Tim Ball. Full legal costs were awarded to Dr. Ball, the defendant in the case. The Canadian court issued its final ruling in favor of the dismissal motion that was filed May 2019 by Dr. Tim Ball's libel lawyers. Mann's, quote, hockey stick graph, first published in 1998, was featured prominently in the UNIPCC, that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and, you know, pretty much the body that has dictated national and intergovernmental policy on climate change. So, and by national, that means they have dictated to your government. The graph showed a spike in global average temperature in the 20th century after about 500 years of stability. Skeptics have long claimed Mann's graph was fraudulent. So the thing that Ball said that got him into a court case was that man belongs in the state pen, not Penn State. So I will post that and you can read that. But I wanted to see who was behind the climate change dispatch. But on their about page, they had a quote which I really liked from the late Michael Crichton, who was a medical doctor and a novelist and a screenwriter. And this is the quote: "The work of science has nothing whatsoever to do with consensus. Consensus is the business of politics. Science, on the contrary, requires only one investigator who happens to be right, which means that he or she has results that are verifiable by reference to the real world. In science, consensus is irrelevant. What is relevant is reproducible results. The greatest scientists in history are great precisely because they broke with the consensus. There is no such thing as consensus science. If it's consensus, it isn't science. If it's science, it isn't consensus. Period." So this is kind of the mantra quote of this site. The other day, I posted a talk, part one of the coverage that Nick from Hayes Reviews and I were doing on Aldous Huxley's Brave New World Revisited. And at a certain point, we were talking about portmanteaus, these mashed up words that mean something totally new. And the one that he was using as an illustration was conspiratainment. And then I mentioned conspirituality. And he got his thread back. I ended up including that in the video, but not the audio version of it. He wrote me and he said, "I remembered the point that I was going to make when I lost my train of thought. I was going to comment on feeling called to do this kind of work and what might be behind that sensation of being compelled forward by learning and seeking truth." And I think that that is a really good way of describing yourself, myself, Nick. If you feel compelled to do this, as I know that Alan did, that is a feeling of being called. But that's a little bit different than conspirituality, and we really didn't have time or the context to get too deep into conspirituality, but I do think that it might be a good time to just ever so lightly, slightly touch on what that is. And this is straight out of Wiki, but it says conspirituality is a portmanteau neologism describing the overlap of conspiracy theories with spirituality, typically of New Age varieties. Contemporary conspirituality became common in the 1990s. Now, I first started hearing about it and seeing it in articles maybe in 2010, but it might have been written about in academic journals before then. Oh, no, here. Hey, guess what? Wiki's going to tell me. The term was coined for the 2011 study, The Emergence of Conspirituality, by sociologists Charlotte Ward and David Voas, published in the Journal of Contemporary Religion, borrowing the word from the name of a Canadian hip-hop group. They characterized the movement as follows: "It offers a broad politico-spiritual philosophy based on two core convictions. The first, traditional to conspiracy theory. The second, rooted in the New Age. The first is that a secret group covertly controls or is trying to control the political and social order. And two, humanity is undergoing a paradigm shift in consciousness. Proponents believe that the best strategy for dealing with the threat of a totalitarian new world order is to act in accordance with an awakened new paradigm worldview." And it cites as promoters, well, I'll let you look at the wiki page and you can see yourself who it cites as promoters of the core ideas here. But I would say in response to this, one, I don't think this is so secret anymore. I'd liken this more to the open conspiracy. I think that there is ample, whether you want to see it or not, whether you're able to see it, I think there's now ample documentation that there are people, world controllers, who have an agenda. And it's a long time in the making to get us where they are now. And I disagree with the second point, because I do not believe that humanity is undergoing a paradigm shift in consciousness. I don't see that. I see no evidence of that. And as Alan would say, we don't go to heaven in a posse. So that is just an aside there, but I bring up Nick's quote and that whole little thing that we touched on for a couple of reasons. The first is that I am compelled to do this, and I am dependent on your support to do that. And those of you who are supporting me and who donate and order Alan's material, the new flash drive set, his books, and other things that I hope that I will be able to focus on producing in the upcoming year, and finding other ways of being self-supporting at what I am compelled to do. And the second reason that I bring it up, well, I guess that leads me to actually telling you what today's Redux is. I had been someone suggested a different talk to me, and I'd listened to that 3 or 4 times, and it was really good, really good. But what I realized was that it would require an enormous amount of editing for me to get it ready for a channel, certain channel, because of things that Alan talked about, and also because bringing it into the now by talking about other things, it would just mean that I would be basically delivering a little few-minute trailer, and that you would have to seek the talk out elsewhere, because in that talk, which I will do something with in the future, well, it's just amazing to me how 15 years ago and longer, Alan was so dead on, right on the mark with what the vector of delivery, the vehicle would be for bringing us into the final stages of transition into a different type of slavery, right? You know, if somebody else is in control. So spot on, and I'll bring that to you later, but it just seemed like an awful lot of work. So I went scouring to see what he might have said at the beginning of a year. And when I listened to this one, I felt that Alan was talking right to me, and I'm hopeful that you'll think he's talking to you too, but I really felt this was aimed at me. So I'll just dive in and tell you why. This is from January 2, 2013. It's a talk that he did on RBN Radio. The title and poem. Entertainment Zoo is destroying you. The most effective war you'll ever find is the scientific war declared on the mind. It's all pervasive, even in novels read in the Third World by people in hovels, designed by academicians, cerebral vultures, weaponized to destroy all strong cultures. In First World nations, it's left devastation, more effective than A-bombs dropped on a nation, leaving abortion factories, debt, welfare state, turned stable families to dysfunction and hate. Behaviorists work to bring this derangement, be alert when watching, or ignore entertainment. One of the articles that Alan read, and there's a couple of dead links, I have found the articles on the Wayback Machine at Internet Archive, and this one was written by Brandon Smith. I'm not that familiar. I've heard the name before, but it's altmarket.com. And that is still on the go, but this article was, the link did not work. So here it is, How to Win the War for Your Mind. Now, Alan read much of this, and so I'm not going to read it again. But I will read just the subheadings. Like I said, I felt that he was talking to me. Do not fear hypothetical dangers. Do not be distracted by minor inconveniences and personal problems. Do not be seduced by gifts. Never trust the media machine. Always verify information. Do not concern yourself with ridicule. Accept the risk before confronting the enemy. Understand your own weaknesses. Do not buy into petty authority. Acknowledge the power of symbolism and myth. Never forget your individualism. Mind over matter. And this was very helpful for me to hear at this time. Some of these lessons, I feel that they are incorporated down into my marrow, but it's still good to hear them repeated from a source or any source. Getting back to Nick's idea that we are compelled to do this, that Alan was compelled to do this kind of work, there are many challenges, and the deeper you get into it and the more that you feel that your commitment is growing, your understanding is deepening, your desire to share what you know is growing, correlated with that will be an intensity, and this is true. There will be an intensity of different types of obstacles and backlashes because your efforts, my efforts, are noticed. And so when I talk about my Aunt Betty and, you know, helping her out, or I talk about my tax bill and I ask for your help, the challenges that I face in my life, I'm just going to say it straight up the way I see it. These are minor inconveniences and my personal problems. And we all have them. So it's getting that fire stoked up inside of yourself to do what you have to do. And nothing and nobody is going to stand in the way of that. That is the position that you've got to be coming from when you're doing this, because the challenges will come left, right, and center. They will be coming at you all the time. And, you know, Alan, what I call sharing the personal problems, do we do this? Yes. Did Alan talk about getting up on the roof and shoveling snow? Did he talk about transmission problems and getting under the hood of the car and looking at the engine when the ground was frozen or even covered in snow? Yes, he talked about that. And I talk about my personal problems too. So we are communicating with you as real people who have problems. But he never let anything that was going on with him personally or any obstacle that we faced come between him and doing the work that he needed to do. And so to get that reminder, yeah, these troubles, they happen, and they happen steadily, but we just keep going. And he even said a line in there. Let's just see if I can find it here. Personal firestorms. This was from the article. Okay. The article said that the purpose was to force the target to divert his attention from his political and social work over to more minor inconveniences. And Alan said, sometimes they do that, even burn your house down or try to. Now, Alan is referring to something that happened, this was witnessed. A helicopter came right down over the house and put an incendiary device down the chimney into the wood-burning stove. And this happened, and they rushed this out. You know, I don't know. I think the way that Alan described it was the stove door was open at the time, because often you have the door open like an inch or two, and you know, if it's not at a full tilt roar, and remove this from the house. And they saw how close the helicopter was to the roof. But the kind of funny thing about this, you know, Alan could, you know, he did mention this at least a time or maybe two that I recall in talks, but there were things that happened, things that I witnessed, things that I experienced with Alan that you would just, you know, he said, well, you can't tell anybody this because nobody would believe you. And I got an email not that long ago, I think sometime in 2024, where somebody was really going off on me. They were saying, you know, I saw pictures of the house and I've seen the chimney and there's no way they could get an incendiary device down there. And it's like, well, first of all, you know, the chimney caps, those metal caps in a wood-burning stove, they can be changed out, right? And you'd think you might want to change it out if you had a helicopter fly low and drop an incendiary device down the chimney. But that's the kind of thing. That's why Alan said, well, you can't really tell people because they won't believe you. But I have gone through things that I won't really talk about too much because, well, number one, I don't want to give anybody ideas. And number two, you might not believe me. But, you know, this is to me, absolutely disgusting. But on the day after Alan passed away, and it might have been 2 days, but I'm really pretty sure that it was the next day, I received an email with a drone footage of the house attached to the email. Didn't say anything in there, as if to say, you know, I know where you are. I know you're there. So these things can be unsettling, but they don't stop you. And I share that one because it's one of the least disgusting, least troubling things that have been done to me or threatened to be done to me. But we don't let these things get us down. So I just want to close by sharing one thing in another article that Alan read. He is talking about the Population Media Center, and he read an article about this, which is also no longer up, but I have found it on the Wayback Machine, and I will link to it. It's called Crypto Eugenic Media Group, Population Control Brainwashing, a Smash Hit, and this is from December 28, 2012, and it's about, well, as you guessed it, the Population Media Center. So I wanted to look at that. It is still on the go. It's an entertainment organization dedicated to women's rights, that's birth control, by the way, and empowerment and population stabilization and the environment. PMC's headquarters staff and offices are located throughout the United States and abroad, including Los Angeles, Montreal, and Cape Town, with the primary office located in South Burlington, Vermont. And it was founded by William Ryerson in 1998 to address population and reproductive health issues by using the Sabido method. And I was curious what the Sabido method was. And so I looked down, there's a chapter there written by Miguel Sabido himself on what he calls entertainment-education. And this is such an interesting topic, and I think it ties in with other things that I would like to share with you sooner than later, that I won't go too deeply into it. But what Miguel Sabido, and writing out of Mexico City, Mexico, was saying was that since he was a very young man at the age of 18, he was interested in knowing, here he says, what effect I had on the audience with my college plays. I started developing a methodology based on the theories of Eric Bentley. And I'll post to Eric Bentley. He was a theater critic and a playwright and so forth. So based on his theories, you can dig into that. I haven't really had time to. To find out what effect melodrama, farce, tragedy, and so on had. My initial attempts toward entertainment-education began with the first column devoted to establishing a theoretical framework and posing a testable hypothesis. So I will link to this chapter, and I will also link to, well, you get that chapter off of a Springer, which is a, some of you might have heard of Springer.com. So you will get that chapter where it's describing Miguel Sabido's background and work developing the Sabido methodology of entertainment-education. So digging a little bit further, I found out that Bill Ryerson, who started Population Media Center, is still on the go. And here he's listed, and there's a little bio on something called Post Carbon Institute. And think about it, post-carbon, right? Because we all breathe out CO2. William Ryerson is founder and president of Population Media Center and president of the Population Institute. For over 40 years, he has worked in the field of reproductive health, including 2 decades of experience adapting the Sabido methodology for behavior change communications to various cultural settings worldwide. He has also been involved in the design of research to measure the effects of such projects in a number of countries, one of which led to a series of publications regarding a serialized radio drama in Tanzania and its effects on HIV/AIDS avoidance and family planning use. It goes on to describe his education and what awards he has received. Now, Bill Ryerson was mentored, it turns out, by someone named David Poindexter, who passed away in 2018. He was the founder of Population Communications International, a Methodist minister and a TV producer. After receiving a master's degree in theology and serving as a pastor for 8 years in Portland, Oregon, he moved to New York City in 1965 to take a post as director of utilization of the NCC's Broadcasting and Film Commission and also became director of promotion services. It was in the late 1960s that Poindexter became interested in population growth issues and family planning solutions after reading The Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich. After realizing that Mexico needed family planning efforts, he met with then president of Televisa, Emilio Milmo, and also present at this meeting was the future president of the United States, George H.W. Bush, and John D. Rockefeller, and pleaded with Televisa president to include programming that would promote family planning. So I guess this, I'm not sure if the whole last name is Azcárraga Milmo, but Azcárraga said they were already doing that exactly. And he introduced Poindexter to Miguel Sabido. Poindexter saw the value in this evidence-based media approach and took Sabido around the globe to spread his methodology and teach others the methods of entertainment education. Having mastered this formal methodology, he founded the NGO Population Communications International in 1985 and grew it to significant influence, producing thousands of TV episodes over the years. Now, at another place, I think this might have been on the Population Media Center, when I'm not seeing it, I will link to it. But what they discovered was that there was a direct correlation between entertainment and a decline in live birth. Okay, here that is. This is on Miguel Sabido's Wikipedia page. Sabido went on to produce the family planning themed telenovelas, and it gives the name of them in Spanish, in the 1970s, which collectively resulted in a 34% decline of the population growth rate of Mexico. The United Nations awarded Mexico with their population award. The United States Agency for International Developments and USAID, I think can safely say this is an arm of the CIA. Thomas Donnelly wrote, "The Televisa family planning soap operas have made the single most powerful contribution to the Mexican population success story." So let's not in any way ever minimize the effect that television programming has on social outcomes. Now, I was diving in a little bit to the United Nations Security Council, the UN, and the greening movement, and I found an article. See if I can't share it with you in some form or another, but it was behind a paywall in the Los Angeles Times from 1993, and this is how determined I can be. It's behind a paywall, so I opened up the source code of the article, which you can sometimes do on things behind a paywall. Not always, but in this case, I did. And I copied the text of it, and it's really tiny, but I might be able to share some of that with you here. I could make the font bigger and add some space in there, but, you know, hey, gotta go. "The world's latest would-be environmental guru certainly has the political connections to carry his message to the top, and he's no longer encumbered by the bonds of conventional diplomacy." What did Alan Watt always tell us about the shadow government and people like Thatcher saying they could get more done behind the scenes? "However, critics are already questioning his qualifications based on a track record that includes a role in official attempts to cover up the 1986 Chernobyl nuclear disaster. Making the jump from perestroika to pollution is Mikhail S. Gorbachev, the man widely credited with bringing down the wall that separated East from West, etc." So I kept going with this article, and he just said how committed he was, and this entity that he was forming, which Alan has told us all about, was called the International Green Cross. So I looked up the International Green Cross. They're still very much on the go, and they give all of the laudatory platitudes about Gorbachev, who's now deceased. And the honorary chair is someone named Diane Meyer Simon. Didn't know who she was. Diane Meyer Simon serves as the honorary chair of Green Cross International. She is founder and president emerita at Global Green USA, a national organization of Green Cross International. Diane Meyer Simon founded Global Green in the United States in 1993, following a GCI board meeting in Moscow, and in alignment with her dear friend, President Mikhail Gorbachev, who launched Green Cross International the same year. So she seemed to me to be a pretty significant player. I looked her up and found out she's from Indiana, USA. She married someone who was at the time the Deputy Secretary of State of Indiana. They got divorced. She married a billionaire shopping mall developer named Herbert Simon, and they divorced in the year 2000. They have three children. Well, that who their three children were was a rabbit hole I wanted to go down. Look each and every one of them up. Her son, Asher Benjamin Meyer Simon, is described in Wiki as an artist in Los Angeles, but here he is with a bio, he and his wife and child, on UNICEF USA, which is a UN body. Their education, diversity, all of this good stuff, right? Asher and Kendra Simon have been involved with UNICEF since 2012 as active board members of the Herbert Simon Family Foundation. They have had the privilege of overseeing many grassroots projects. So that's them. They are into UNICEF Kid Power, UNICEF life-saving work. They just have all kinds of good things that they want to do to create vibrant communities with UNICEF. So I looked up a daughter, and she appears to be the one who's kind of running the family empire now, or the family foundation. So it says here, Simon pivots to social justice. This is January 12, 2021. She admits she was blessed by the circumstances of her birth. She's the daughter of a billionaire, and her mother was Diane Meyer Simon, the notable political and environmental activist who founded Global Green USA. And goes on and on. And so her parents created in her a very environmentally conscious and progressive thinker is what they made her to be. And so she is now involved in taking the family foundation and putting it on issues. They've traditionally been involved with art and culture, education, and so forth. She's extending that out into social justice and, of course, sustainability, because sustainability is where it's at. So she says here, all of the things that they want to do. We are still focused on the environment, arts and culture, and basic needs, but social justice will be its own impact area. It took me a while with the third daughter, Sarah Meyer Simon, because she is an investor who seems to specialize in investing in really hip and trendy restaurants. But here I find her 2014, and she was basically making the opening remarks at the 18th Annual Millennium Awards. She's described as entrepreneur, philanthropist, and Global Green USA board member, Sarah Meyer Simon. And so I will attach this little YouTube link, and you can see her yourself talking about the importance of getting hold of our climate. In this 2014 opening speech that Sarah Meyer Simon does at the Millennium Award, she's talking about the different projects that the Green USA has been involved in, kind of bragging on what they're doing. And one of them that she seemed particularly proud of was a zero energy affordable housing project. Zero energy affordable housing project. And I thought, the tents, the flooded out tents over there in Gaza, those could be considered a zero energy affordable housing project, right? These are the kinds of foundations and non-governmental organizations and families who work intergenerationally to bring about change. Always, as Alan pointed out, the same kinds of things that they're interested in, overpopulation, sustainability, and so forth. And these are the kind of people that will be heavily involved in helping to dictate how this message gets put across. So I definitely think that the Sabido Entertainment Education and the Population Media Center warrant more attention. And so I might even touch on this again. I might touch on this again very soon in another talk. Thank you.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watson. This is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 2nd of January 2013. For newcomers, as always, I hope you make good use of the website cuttingthroughthematrix.com. There's well over 1,000 audios for download for free. And I go through the big system you're born into, explain how it came to be about. I go across the foundations and organizations, the big clubs that own it, in fact, set it up and own it. And their intentions of taking the world over, basically, and running it properly on their own behalf, of course. And really, we're all down to renewable resources. That's what humanity happens to be. We're classified amongst trees and everything else. And we're quite cheap, actually, to maintain. And the big boys simply are going for the whole planet now, all the resources, food, water, everything. And they pretty well own it all, because after all, they own all the governments, and they put them in place for you, and they solidify them in your mind as though it's all real by repetition. And really, a government really is just a fiction. It's an idea. That's all government really is, you know. And you have to go along with it for it to exist. It's very, very simple. And the trick they've used for so long now is to use authority and authoritarian reports from newscasts and so on to make it more real and solidified in your minds. But it's just an idea, remember, like money's an idea, as like a price is an idea as well. So always remember that when you hear all the bad news, that all these governments and so on, all the parasites and multi-layered governmental officials that are adding all the time to them are nothing but their own idea and using massive propaganda to make you believe it's all exceptionally real. And remember too that you're the audience that bring me to you. You can keep me going by buying the books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and you can purchase them from the US to Canada by using personal check or international postal money order, or you can send cash. Or remember, straight donations are really, really awfully welcome in these austere times, as it's called. And I hope you all had a good Christmas and a Happy New Year as well. And talking about Happy New Year's as well, and the cons that go on incessantly, because you see, we're run by nothing but cons and incredible lies that are all at the top. They come to consensus. They're called consensus builders. And some of the foundations, the fronts for the big international private bankers, actually have foundations that just do nothing but build consensus between countries, NGOs, and other foundations. So they're all on board together to get things through, always lying to the public about the real intentions and the reasons for them. But weather, of course, weather is one of the big ones they're using right now, and blaming us all for carbon, etc. It's all our fault, apparently, as these, what can you call them? They're bar stewards, you know, these characters who get stinky rich off you, because you're the herd, you understand? You're a herd. And since most ancient times, those who dealt with money were called the good shepherds. And they run the world now, these good shepherds, you see. And it's awfully good for them, that is, as we all go under with their fictitious money scams. And it all is truly fiction. It really is. Today's money is all fiction. But Greenland, for instance, ended the year with some of the coldest weathers ever recorded, it says, in these times of global warming. And it says in December 29th, they hit minus 78 Fahrenheit, 5 degrees above the coldest temperature ever recorded there. It says NASA's only interested in a couple of days during the summer when temperatures got barely above freezing for a couple of hours. But it doesn't matter, you understand, because Richard Haass and all the kin he's got at the Council on Foreign Relations must get this scam through, because it's going to rake in trillions for them, trillions and trillions from across the planet, and control us all into austerity and poverty. It's proper sheep should be, you see, because that's how they see us, as sheep. Back with more after this break. Hi folks, I'm back, cutting through the matrix, and you understand that war takes many, many forms, and they all work together. Different types of warfare all work together, from soft wars, psychological wars, into hard wars, and hardware wars as well. So it goes on all the time, because you're run by a dominant minority. And a dominant minority has to take out the last of the resisting countries, the countries that didn't adapt to central banking systems and so on. Because the world has to be standardized so that they can rule it properly, you see. For themselves, that is. And that means destroying all cultures as well. Culture war is an awful big one, because it's not an intention of bringing in new cultures to countries like they did with Britain and then telling them to adapt into the system. They did it one time, but then they changed it to, no, keep your cultures. And so you've got these little segregated ghettos all over all the major cities. This was done intentionally, and they end up really having skirmishes, and the government loves that kind of stuff, because then government can bring more laws out to control everybody, you see. Very simple. Been used many times, even thousands of years ago. And by money boys then too. So there's many ways to do it, as I say, and money is one of the biggest ones there is to take down countries. And even Pakistan is going to the International Monetary Fund to seek a fresh bailout. Now, Pakistan, of course, is on this so-called enemies list, and mainly because they're still a Muslim country, and all Muslim countries have to be abolished, basically. And that's what they have. They're using this because Muslims have an enemy, and it's not Americans and British, but they have an enemy, a traditional enemy apparently, and they have to be taken out and put into the standardized system. And then the Western culture, which isn't Western culture, it was also given to you by a minority, it was to be imposed there. Then they'll have lots of prostitution, they'll have lots of abortions, and all their old culture will just go by the wayside. That's how you destroy countries. It's very simple to do when you own the system. And the system everywhere in the first world countries is completely owned. All your media is owned. All your entertainment is owned by the same minority, who know how to take you down, because you imitate what you see. And the children especially are very, very easily influenced, and they copy the same attitudes, etc., that's put across to them. Very simple stuff. And here's an article that ties in with it to an extent. Anyway, it says, how to win the war for your mind. And it goes on about the usual kind of stuff, about how they teach this kind of stuff to the powers that be. But it also mentions tricks to defend yourself and against the psychological attacks. It says, as with any method of self-defense, constant training is required. For the past century, at least in the United States, a subversive and secret Cold War has been waged against the people in the form of psychological subjugation. This Cold War is designed to weaken our resolve, the heritage, that's your culture and everything, your self-belief, our confidence, and our integrity in preparation for a hot war against our time-honored constitutional rights. Well, remember, I put up this up years ago, the CFR itself is an article in Foreign Affairs magazine where one of the top special people wrote about running rings around the Constitution rather than just hitting it head on and having a backlash. They would just run rings around it or superstructures over it and get what they wanted that way. And they've been doing that all along too. And it says, the power elite know well that the most effective strategy for victory in any battle is to convince your enemy to surrender before the fight even begins. Today, the American populace is being conditioned to lie down and die a mental death, to give up the inner war, so that when the outer war comes, they will already be defeated. Now, I should add to this too, that a lot of this is also done by bringing in depressions, you know, financial depressions. And money game is just that. It's a money game. It's a con job. They make money out of nothing at the top. It's so important that their victims believe it's all real. And you think it is because you can swap that dollar for a few caramels or something. And, of course, it always gets inflated. Inflated meaning it's devalued and devalued all the time. And when you go for your pay raise at the beginning of the year and you get extra numbers at the end of it, the amount that you're given, you think, you're winning. No, you're not winning, because everybody else puts their prices up at the same time too. You're actually going backwards. If you look at the last wages for the last 20, 30 years, Canada, States and so on, they've been going backwards. So money controls everything at this. And mind you, governments could, if people got real governments in, which they haven't done for a long, long time, then they could easily start making their own money and selling it to the banks like they used to do in the Bank of Canada. And that way it's created debt-free to start with. And no country should be in the business of being a banker itself and lending to other countries either. It's got nothing to do with your nation. And even Jefferson said the same thing, that any generation born with a standing debt already there from a previous generation are de facto slaves. And you must never forget that. This is a slavery system. And the boys who rule it have been in the slave business for thousands of years. I hope you understand that too. Nothing new to them. There's no trick they haven't learned. You understand? It says, corrupt governments will rely heavily on what they call psyops, which are primarily propaganda initiatives meant to demoralize their target, which is usually the citizenry. In the case of a despotic regime, psyops involve the insinuation of lies, half-truths, threats, and brutality that is choreographed to elicit a very specific reaction. It's used to instigate strong emotional responses en masse that will work in favor of the oligarchy. The following guidelines can shield you from the arrows of deceit, allowing you to maintain control and avoid being unconsciously influenced to labor against your own case. Then it goes on to do not fear hypothetical dangers. Fear is the weapon of choice when it comes to totalitarian proponents. Conquering armies and bureaucracies are notorious for exaggerating the strength and numbers in order to squelch the fighting spirit of those they intend to rule. Genghis Khan, for instance, used the tactic of exaggerated numbers along with vicious genocide to strike terror in regions he had not yet compelled to overtake. Upon his arrival, the Mongol hordes had received such a reputation, some of it fabricated, that many regions surrendered immediately without question. When becoming an activist against a criminal establishment, it's very common to be the target of fear campaigns. Today, those of us in the liberty movement hear warnings from random concerned parties constantly telling us that our efforts are all for nothing, that we are making ourselves targets, that the globalist system is far too strong and far too advanced to be defeated. They have predator drones and NSA databases and soldiers without empathy, etc., etc. Their hope is to make us afraid of hypothetical situations which can neither be confirmed nor denied, to make us observe over the odds rather than the objective. In other words, they hope to encourage a state of mass cowardice. To undo this tactic, you must remain focused on your goal, regardless of the possible danger. That's to say, the strength of the enemy, whether real or fantasy, is irrelevant. It is meaningless. Goliath is nothing but an obstacle, and all obstacles can be dealt with. Move forward towards the objective and never stop. And it's true enough, if you stand up and say, or even get close to saying the truth, you'll have massive smear campaigns. Massive smear campaigns, and even government coming down on top of you, because you're not allowed to say certain things, you see. Because you're occupied, you're all slaves, you see. And it says, don't be distracted by minor inconveniences and personal problems. At the height of the communist power in East Germany, the Stasi secret police deployed a tactic which they called Zersetzung, which means to corrode or undermine. It says the policy involves the use of subtle manipulations of a particular person's life in order to interfere with his ability to function normally and participate fully in dissenting activities. The study would send agents to a person's home to arrange items or fake a break-in, often to attempt to create emotional conflicts between the dissident and his wife, family and friends, and to damage business relationships. It's true, they make phone calls to the police at work and all these kind of things and start spreading rumours and so on. The purpose was to force the target to divert his attention from his political and social work over to more minor inconveniences. And sometimes they do that, even burn your house down, or try to. Personal firestorms, whether engineered by Stasi or by natural conflicts, are destructive only when you give them too much credence and attention. Some people become utterly fixated with their own private soap operas, and this weakness is often exploited by government elements. The truth is our home, lives, and tensions in them are secondary when it comes to defending our principles and our culture against enslavement and oblivion. Now, the part of that is very, very true. Is that it's not just your culture, it's what you want to keep of your culture, or keeping it all together. Because you see, to conquer people, you must destroy the culture. It makes people very, very strong. A common culture is the biggest problem. And really, all cultures down through history generally had a main religion, whether you believe in it or not. Didn't matter. It united the people, you see. And that's what the big boys fear. And all the writings from the far left, which is also owned as a weapon of the dominant minority, they always talked about the big ideas. Ideas were terrifying to them, because they could unite people, you see. And so they weren't scared so much of retaliatory action physically. Big ideas that would really spread and take over was the biggest thing that they ever feared. And that's why your culture is almost decayed at this particular stage of the game, after 50, 60 years of TV and degradation going down the tubes. But it says here, it says family and friends who get in the way or are manipulated into getting in the way should be ignored. And that's true if you're serious about this at all. You can't be put off by people just falling away from you. Don't be seduced by gifts. This is, tyrants love to offer gifts to the populace, especially at the onset of their rise to dominance. Maybe the promise of new jobs, better infrastructure, free healthcare, more food, more safety, or even free cell phones, which also does offer a lot of people celebrity status, because it costs a lot to get celebrity status, you understand? It's a lot. They make stars today, and it costs a fortune. So when they come up and offer you for nothing, on certain terms, then most folk take the bait. Sometimes they don't even know they're being used. It can be done so slickly. Because everyone believes in celebrities. Back after this. Hi folks, we're back, cutting through the matrix. Reading an article is quite good about protecting your mind, basically, for the war that you intend to go into, which is psychological primarily. And it says, do not concern yourself with ridicule. It says, fighting disinformation is vital, but personal pride is not important. Safeguarding our egos is not important. Trying to please everyone all the time is impossible and also not important. Ridicule is used not only to discredit activists, but it's also used to make them question their own resolve. If you cannot be embarrassed or browbeaten, then you cannot be made afraid, and you cannot be defeated by mere words. Require your opponents to answer your legitimate questions. Now, see, if they can't get you on what you're saying, because they can't, because what you're saying is the truth, and you've checked it all, you see, then they try to do these ad hominem attacks on you, and get everyone, and get other idiots to follow, which they will get idiots to follow, you see. People can't think and reason and use logic. They follow quite easily through emotional tags, you see. Require your opponents to answer legitimate questions, move past their distractions, and push the issue of tangibility. Make them produce a legitimate argument. When they cannot and continue to revert to ad hominem attacks, they expose the frailty of their position, and you have won. Remember, too, a lot of these people are actually paid to do what they do. They won't tell their followers that. They just use the followers. But they get paid to do it. And you won't be the only one they're paid for. It's often this organizations under one name that are meant to do this. We know this from their own government disclosures. And it goes on to the risks before confronting the enemy and so on. And there are risks, of course. As I say, if you go all the way and say the whole truth, it's legal. It's not legal to tell the whole truth today. Here's another article here too. It says crypto eugenic media group population control brainwashing a smash hit. And this is interesting. It ties right in with it, you see. I've talked about this many, many times before about brainwashing. And that's all you get through media and entertainment. Entertainment's even better. It's more effective because the people don't know they're getting brainwashed. They think they're getting entertainment and to enjoy themselves. But it says, President of the Population Media Center, Bill Ryerson, recently bragged that its population control brainwashing campaign in developing nations has been a smash hit. Now, that goes back to a perpetual war article I read from the military's own magazine, the US military, where they said they would use the same degenerate culture that has replaced American culture through television. And they would use that as a weapon on other third world countries to destroy their cultures. That's how you must dominate and destroy their cultures. It's so obvious. And it says the Population Media Center is an American population group producing fictional programs for worldwide dissemination purposes. Its mission is to spread the message of population reduction through works of fiction. Ryerson, the center's president, also heads the Washington-based Population Institute. Both groups are active in the modern-day population movement, striving for worldwide population reduction in the name of the Earth. During an interview with Peak Prosperity's Chris Martinson, Ryerson boasted that radio soap operas are the most effective way to cull populations worldwide. And I've got the link for that too. You can hear the guy's interview. I'll put that right tonight too. One of the things that we do, and that is the primary thing we do, is to use a strategy of communications that has turned out from everything we have been able to measure to be the most cost-effective strategy for changing behavior. So it's behavior modification, you see, with regard to family size and contraceptive use on a per behavior change basis of any strategy we have found on the planet. Ryerson explains that the fictional platforms have proven to be successful carriers of the crypto-eugenic message. The use of long-running serialized dramas, melodramas like soap operas, in which characters gradually evolve from the middle of the road in that society into positive role models for daughter education, delaying marriage and childbearing until adulthood, spacing of children, limiting of family size and various other health and social goals of each country, and we have now done such programs in 45 countries. 45 countries. Ryerson continues to brag about the center's propaganda campaigns, especially those in Nigeria. It's a program we ran from 2007 to 2009, was listed by a 70% of the was listened to, this is the radio show, of the population at least weekly. It was a twice a week program. It was clearly a smash hit, and it was a smash hit because it was highly suspenseful and highly entertaining. But it had a storyline dealing with a couple deciding to use family planning, which is almost taboo in northern Nigeria because less than 10% of the people in that region use any modern method of contraception. We had 11 clinics have healthcare workers ask clients what motivated them to come in for family planning. 67% of them named the program, the fictional program, as the motivation. And that's just radio. It's used in the West all the time. All of these techniques are used in the West, more so. It says that drives and explains the kind of thing we can dramatically change demographic trends globally. We need to greatly expand this type of work. It says the center is heavily sponsored by the corporate and philanthropic elites, such as big foundations, again, the banker fronts. On its slick-looking website, the center states, contributions from all partnerships with the following organizations have enabled us to do, which initiates improved health in all in people all around the world while providing engaging entertainment. Their list counts many United Nations organizations amongst its contributors, as well as USAID divisions operating in so-called high-fertility nations. And it's got a whole list of all the UNICEF and groups and United Nations groups, so a whole chapter of them basically involved in this. So in addition, the center receives funding from literally all the major foundations, including the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences Foundation, Bank of America Charitable Gift Fund, the David Rockefeller Fund, Ford Foundation, and the IMF Employees Fund. Now, remember, this is just radio. You've had 50, 60 years of this stuff on television, and your whole culture has been destroyed. Back with more after this break. Hi, folks, I'm back, cutting through the matrix, and carbon taxes, I mean, energy taxes, carbon taxes, and so on. All the big elites' plan hinges on more taxes from you. It's to bring you down, you see. Remember what they said at the Club of Rome, the big think tank for the United Nations, they said that back in the 70s, that you bring you into a post-industrial, post-consumerist society, which meant austerity, you see. And when your own governments, which are not your own governments, of course, signed the World Trade Organization's various treaties to ship all your manufacturing off to China, and it was all done deliberately. China didn't force their arms to do it. It was all prearranged years and years and years ago. They knew there'd be no work left for anyone else, you see, and they'd bring in this so-called austerity. It also create a massive welfare system during that time as well to take care of some of the damage, because they didn't want revolution too early, understand, or backlash from the people. So they postponed it by throwing out credit cards as well, like crazy through the 70s and 80s. Everybody could get them. It doesn't matter if you defaulted on them, they'd give you more. So it was all to get you through that period without too much chaos and too much poverty being visible, at least. And they threw all the cards out there. But the big one now is, of course, austerity. We're going into austerity and the big, big stick. It doesn't matter. Again, remember what a meme is. A meme, which becomes a theme, but it really is put out there, like me, as we prefer to say it. But it's they put this out there, like Frisco Cliff is a meme, you see. And then they track how many people are using the terminology instantly, real time, and what's catching on with the public. Everything out there is weaponized. They have massive panels of marketers and specialists, neuroscientists, working out these little slogans that you're going to pick up on, and it becomes concretized in your mind. It becomes physical in your mind. It's an abstract idea. It's nonsense. It's a con as well. It's a con. Pure con game, that's all. Because they need all this cash to bring you into austerity. Well, their own banks of these special dominant minority end up craving or getting all the cash coming, flowing into them, and then it eliminates the middle classes. Same with the fiscal cliff idea. Get rid of the middle classes, you see. Then you have this of the ultra elites and all the peasants down below. For the new world order, this new system, this new organized society run properly the way that those in academia say it should be. And of course, they're on board with it too. Academia was weaponized an awful long time ago. It's completely politicized. Completely politicized. That's its goal, is to turn out the next bunch of global managers that will dominate you. But Australia, putting the carbon tax, as you know, and I'll put this article up, is responsible for damaging 80% of Australian small businesses. Well, you can understand these same characters tried this same thing before World War II came along even. And countries in Europe, small business was getting put under by big malls opening across, especially in Germany and different countries like that, doing with mom-and-pop stores. And then the prices, once they put them all under, the prices all shot up with the guys who monopolized everything through their massive malls, etc. They were eventually, when the Nazis came in, they actually took them all down and went back to the maws and paws. Because they knew people who want to keep their own independence have to have real competition. I mean, you've got 10 greengrocers in one big long street. It's good that, because it keeps the prices down. Same with your meat and everything else. So Maggie Thatcher even touched on this. She said that the future would be big corporations only. Small business would be out of the way. And she did her best to destroy all small business. This is the agenda. Same with small farms and everything else. Nothing but corporate farms, you see. That's the agenda for the future. Worked out years ago, before you were born. You see, the big boys never change their plan. Never ever change their plan. They don't have to change their plans. And then you get into this one here. It's quite interesting. The Council on Foreign Relations. This, again, private organization. It's just an American branch of the Royal Institute for International Affairs. Both private organizations, you see. And they speak on behalf of the elite. They give you all your media through Reuters and so on, and to make sure it's all standardized lies that you get, because all media always lies. Nobody does investigative reporting today. It doesn't happen. You see? But it's very, very important to make sure that you get standardized lies, so you all believe it, you see? And it's been a long, long time trying to convince the public through marketing campaigns how truthful they are. Even in Canada, about 15 years ago, suddenly radio broadcasts and news broadcasts, your TV news broadcasts, even the government-owned ones in Canada would give you your most trusted man in Canada, a guy you'll never meet, who's just a mouthpiece and reads his script on his news. And apparently he's very believable to most folk who truly watch every night. Every country was at this. Because we see the generation before were very mistrustful of the news. Knowing, you see, in their day that it's always used by the big corporate elites. They owned all the papers, so you always were very suspicious of what they were saying. Not now. People really believe the news. They really do. Never question it. Council on Foreign Relations, anyway. Remember, they're the big front pieces to make sure the standardized news gets to you and that all the right books are on the shelves in the stores. On the right facts that they're going to give you on history and the making and predictive history, as we also call it in our term, predictive history. In other words, they predict in advance their agenda, where they're going to go with it, and they predict it will be written that way in history, looking back. And that's actually how it works, in fact. You see, you're run by agendas, and nothing happens by itself. Nothing happens by itself. CFR challenges for global governance in 2013, it says. It says the roundup is a feature of the Council of Councils initiative. They also have on the CFR a special branch called the Council of Councils, whose only job is to keep pulse through all their big think tanks and their affiliates and governmental agencies that spy on you to make sure that you're all starting to behave and believe what you're given and behave the appropriate way, you see, for global government. So the Council of Councils initiative is to get just that. They don't want to call it government. They want to call it governance. It sounds better, you see. And it says, from the Iran nuclear crisis to global economic wars, the upcoming year will pose steadily challenges to international bodies seized with maintaining peace and prosperity. You see? So what they mean by peace is conquering everybody in the planet and prosperity for their bosses that they serve. Experts from four leading think tanks weigh the issue. So here's your think tanks again, you see. And it says Michael Fulilove, strange name that, Fulilove, I don't think there's any love in him at all, of Australia's Lowley Institute for International Policy, says China must assume the responsibilities incumbent on a global power, but China's vision of stepping up will not be the same as that of the United States. Now what he's really saying, and they've been saying this for years at the CFR, they have to take over the world as a policeman of the world from the United States. That's what that means. They've said it many times before in the past. That's what that means. This is in addition to the crisis in Syria and Iran's progression towards nuclear capabilities, which, again, President Richard Haass identifies also that is a problem. And Haass has got a great background. You can look at that up too. You'll find commonalities between all of them at the top. Identifies trade, cybersecurity, and climate change as major governance tests. You see? Cybersecurity, that means you're all being spied. You understand you're in a fenceless prison camp. You are. You're in a fenceless prison camp of cyber war. They're spying you on everything. Everything you're doing. Everything you say. And again, climate change. They've got to get this climate change thing through to bring on austerity, to make sure they bring in a proper poor population across the world. Then you dominate them very easily with poor people. Very easy to dominate them. And it says here, the Shanghai Institute for International Studies, Yemin Yang, says governance priorities are strengthening existing institutions. That's all the new ones that they've created for carbon taxes and everything else. Forging consensus is a consensus building again between state and non-state actors. That's big corporate international business and NGOs that are also financed by the foundations. And harnessing regional efforts in areas like trade into common global action. That's, again, strengthening and bringing the rest of the countries into these three trading blocks that Karl Marx talked about would come about in the 1800s. Similarly, INSOR's Igor Jurgens identifies three issues: the continuing turmoil in the Middle East, environmental concerns, and the growing wealth gap that will have serious implications for global governance, which they know because, see, they're creating the global wealth gap as they destroy all the jobs that gave you a wage you could at least live on. And then it goes into Michael Fulilove, Executive Director of Lowy Institute for International Policy. So you think you're voting for governments? No, these are the guys who run your governments. And you don't vote for any of them. Or the foundations that they work for. Or you've got nothing to do with the guys who finance these characters at the top. Yet they tell your governments what to do. Your government doesn't listen to you, they listen to these guys. This is called the parallel government, the combination of these organizations, foundations. That's what Thatcher called it. And she joined it when she left politics. She talked about it. This is the real government. She said, the world's greatest global governance challenge is to establish shared responsibility for the most intractable problems of our post-unipolar world. That means post-American world. Much of the world chafed against the United States' enormous relative power in the first decade after the end of the Cold War. Many enjoyed its grievous overreach in the following decade, but now more capitals need to assume the role of responsible stakeholders. That was urged on Beijing by Robert Zolik in 2005. China serves as the most pressing example of a country that must embrace its growing power in the international arena. And that's back to military, you understand. Beijing has been more active in its dealings with the international community in many positive ways, yet it's so far demurred from assuming the responsibilities incumbent on a global power, military again, and nurturing the international system it hopes to help to lead. See, so understand your future is all decided by people you have never met or even heard of. And you still go and vote for this joke that you're given. In every country, you still go and vote. They're all screened and put in by these characters like the CFR. In the UN Security Council chambers and other forums, China is increasingly willing to take the lead and behave more like a great power. On the other hand, it remains disengaged from issues that do not trespass directly on its core interests. It's largely preoccupied with protecting its interests and those of its allies rather than projecting its influence or doing much to strengthen the international system. And then, of course, being the CFR, they go on about the Iran nuclear issue is only one example. Beijing's interests in Iran are not, of course, identical to Western interests. Well, it's not Western interests. It's the folk who are the dominant minority in the West. Because the West wouldn't care two hoots about Iran having nuclear reactors and cheaper power. But somebody does, guess. It says, yet it's a key player in the international political and economic system. It's giving insufficient weight to the great risk posed by an Iranian nuclear bomb. It says, China has changed the way it does business, but continues to define its national interests narrowly and pursue them with an uncompromising resolve. China wants respect, but not responsibility. It's reluctant to bind its own freedom of movements and subsume it within international institutions in the way the United States did after the Second World War. See, they're admitting here that the US is a system of governments and a system with a constitution, threw it away by the traitors who signed on to the United Nations at the end of the Second World War. That's when it all really changed. They tried to change it when FDR first got in. Remember, they created a depression to make sure he got in with a coterie of, let's just call them communists. It's safer that way. But they all were actually card-carrying communist members. But that's how they got him in. Wall Street got their man in by creating the Great Depression, and they staffed it with communists to destroy what would be the great power, you see. Especially the old system of the old type with a pretty solid culture. Because everybody who went to America became American. Willingly and happily. Not like now. It says China's wealth and power grow so its interests expand. A middle power foreign policy is inadequate for a great power. If China is to help run the international system, it has a stake in strengthening it. I suggest respect with China and other rising powers need to strike a new balance between their traditional economic and security concerns and the broader imperatives they must now satisfy, including stable great power relations, non-proliferation, and developing their international prestige. The old principle applies, with great power comes great responsibility. You understand, those who dominate the world also dominate China. I hope you understand that. It's the last thing you will think of. And is. And here again, Council on Foreign Relations reveal how world government can be achieved in 2013. The Council on Foreign Relations and so on, established in 1921 by the global elites, has publicized what it believes to be the challenges that need to be overcome to establish world government in 2013. In summary, the Council on Foreign Relations has sought the opinion of four globals from around the world on what are the greatest challenges the world faces that would prevent the formation of world government in 2013. Richard N. Haass, the President of Council on Foreign Relations, who's also a Bilderberg Group member as well, Yang Zemin, Trilateral Commission member 2010, and Igor Yurgens, Chairman of the Management Board, Institute Contemporary Development, Russian Federation, Michael Fulilov, Executive Director of the Lowy Institute for International Policy again. It's astonishing, these globalists claim that the emergence of world government will not occur if the following seven challenges are not overcome in 2013. Number one, the world needs to establish shared responsibility for the most intractable problems of our post-unipolar world. Therefore, the world governments to become a reality, China needs to play a greater role, as I just said, as a global power, to talk about a military role. Number two, to implement world governments, essential to strengthen organizations like the United Nations, World Trade Organizations, International Monetary Fund, and the G20. None of these things were voted on by any populace in any country. Just like the G20, this formed itself. This is dangers of the new world order. Major powers need to begin engaging less prominent countries so that both major and minor players in the global political landscape can further the network governance principle. You ever heard of a network governance principle? Well, I'll put the link up tonight for you. Essentially, the key to world government in 2013 is for all countries to enter into new mindsets and functioning mechanisms, meaning a one-type mechanism system. Globally, trade needs to be more regulated. In 2013, government subsidies should be tackled at the global level as opposed to regional or bilateral level. And the world needs to begin harnessing regional efforts into common action on a global level. It's all standardization. Understand? Standardization. Just the internet needs to be more regulated. It's believed that governments should start maintaining the free flow of information on the internet to limit the amount of cyber aggression. Back with more after this break. Hi folks, we're back, cutting through the matrix. And you gotta understand too, this dominant minority, the ones who are now the dominant minority, came out a long time ago with a war on every country they entered into. And in order to dominate and have your own culture established, you must destroy all the rest, you see. But part of it, too, was to do with a theory that they had. The people didn't like them because of being mentally ill. No kidding. What an amazing conclusion to come to. Everyone else was mentally ill. And I've gone through this before with quite a few of their different organizations, foundations, etc., like the Frankfurt School. And you find people like Adorno. Theo Adorno came out with the authoritarian personality. He's quite explicit into why they were doing what they were doing. And this, they got permission to set up in the US when they ran out of Germany, and continue his program there. And part of it too was they got a presidential authority to set up, along with the Macy Group, and alter American culture because they thought they could become Nazis. No kidding. And they also brought in psychiatry. That was another weaponized thing. They dreamed up psychiatry to try and establish everybody else was mentally ill except themselves. You see? And that's where they brought Freud forward. That was part of that technique as well. And they also claimed that the reason, I'm not kidding you, these are big, big, big foundations. They believed that the reason that the West really didn't like them too much and really kept their cultures and wouldn't let them take over their culture was because they weren't having enough sex. That's why they pushed Freud out there with all these sexual theories. And so they try and make people uninhibited in the West, while they kept for their own group strictly to certain laws, very old laws in fact, so that they wouldn't destroy themselves in the process. This is all fact, folks. Read it yourself. Read their own books. And I also came up with a theory before, but they even knew where the genes were, that it must be a genetic thing, you see. And one day, they get the perfect population of slaves to serve them by altering all their genetic codes. And take in a certain one and put in another one and so on, make you very placid and happy. DNA of Sandy Hook killer Adam Lanza to be examined for evil gene in the first study of his kind ever conducted on a mass murderer. Ooh. So it says here, scientists have been asked to study the DNA of the Newtown school killer, Adam Lanza, to see if he's an evil gene that's led him to carry out the massacre. The study, which will look at any abnormalities or mutations in his individual DNA, is believed to be the first of its kind carried out. Lanza slaughtered 20 children and so on, blah, blah, blah. Make sure they get that little bit in there. And it says the 20-year-old also shot his mother and so on and so on. So anyway, the massacre prompted Obama to look into new gun controls and banning assault rifles such as the AR-15 Bushmaster used by Lanza in his rampage. I'll put that up tonight too, along with the Feinstein site, as I said too, because she's got a fascinating history herself. I mean, she's made billions along with her husband. She gets laws passed through the Senate and his private company gets all the deals. They got a deal with, was it India, I think it was, for a certain kind of trade thing that she pushed through, and they raked in $42 billion. In their own company. It's not bad being in government if you're very, very special, isn't it? But you've all got bad genes, you see, and one day there won't be bad genes around anymore, and these special folk make sure of it by giving themselves the rights to test all of you before you can have children. And I'm not kidding. This is old stuff, folks. Old stuff. From Hamish Marcel from Ontario, Canada, is good night to me. Your God or your gods go with you.
The ability to perfect the physical and mental characteristics of every unborn child.
To choose the genes in society.
In the not too distant future, our DNA will determine everything about us. A minute drop of blood. Saliva.